live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing.
In every corner of the Commonwealth, doctors, nurses, and medical workers have been stepping up on our behalf in unprecedented ways over the past few weeks. At the same time, the organizations that employ these folks have had their operating models totally disrupted by both COVID-19 and also many of the decisions and the orders that we've issued to make sure that we are properly prepared for the surge. The result for many of our healthcare provider organizations has been a huge hit to their operations and to their cash flow. To make sure these organizations can continue to operate and continue to meet the astronomical demands that we are placing on them, we plan to invest $800 million into the Commonwealth's healthcare providers. This funding will support hospitals, nursing facilities, primary care providers, behavioral health providers, and long-term service providers, and supports for other providers impacted by COVID-19 and the health emergency and many of the declarations, orders, and decisions that we've made and issued. More than $400 million will be allocated to hospitals, more than $80 million will go to nursing facilities, and more than $300 million will be allocated to other healthcare providers that are delivering medical care or providing services that keep residents safe in their homes and out of the hospitals. It will be distributed starting this month, April, through July. We were able to pull this critical funding together largely through offsets by reductions in MassHealth and enhanced federal revenue. And we want to thank our colleagues in the legislature who we engaged in a discussion with this prior to making this announcement and going forward with this proposal. The funding comes in addition to the $290 million in immediate cash relief and $550 million in accelerated payments to providers that we announced earlier in March. As we continue to navigate these unprecedented times, our administration will keep doing whatever we can to support the healthcare workers who are keeping us all safe. With respect to testing, as you know, we've been working aggressively to expand capacity here in the Commonwealth and are continuing to ramp up our efforts. Massachusetts is now one of the largest and most expansive testers in the country, and testing is going to be a huge part of how we develop strategies to deal with this virus going forward. We're incredibly grateful to the public and private labs and healthcare partners that have allowed us to dramatically increase our testing capacity and our output. In addition to the state lab, there are now 25 public and private labs testing in Massachusetts. As of yesterday, 76,429 patients have been tested, with nearly 4,500 new tests reported in the previous 24 hours. We're making a lot of progress, but we also know there's much more to do. This weekend, Lieutenant Governor Polito and I visited a new drive-through testing facility for first responders at Patriots Place in Foxborough. As we continue to talk to our partners at the local level across the state, we're going to continue to add more of these in all parts of Massachusetts. And earlier today, in partnership with CVS, we announced a new rapid testing site in Lowell, which will enable on-the-spot testing and results at no cost. The new CVS site in Lowell will use the new Abbott ID Now test and anticipates being able to test 1,000 people per day and receive the results on-site within minutes. People will be able to know if they're positive for coronavirus and take action immediately to seek the proper treatment. Positive cases will be connected to our contact tracing program, who will be on site, which we announced last Friday. And multiple language assistance will also be made available. These tests are available for all residents who qualify based on the CVS website's questionnaire, and more information is available at cvs.com. The new test site is well stocked with personal protective equipment, and we're hopeful to have enough supplies right now to get them through at least the next 2 weeks of testing. And we're grateful to the folks over at CVS for getting this up and running and supporting our efforts to expand testing capacity. As we work to isolate positive cases and prevent further spread, we know there's no population at greater risk than seniors, especially the ones who live in congregate care and long-term care facilities. There are roughly 1,000 such facilities in the Commonwealth, so this is a hugely important part of our response to the pandemic. Through the command center, The Commonwealth has taken several steps to support congregate care and long-term care facilities. The COVID-19 Command Center has been doing several things to help these facilities prepare as best they can before infection started spreading, and doing everything we can now to help these facilities deal with outbreaks. Should an outbreak occur, the Department of Public Health assigns an epidemiologist and nurses to support the staff who are working directly with the residents at each facility. Today, the Department of Public Health has issued enhanced guidelines to protect the health of residents and healthcare workers and to reduce the transmission of COVID-19 spread both inside and outside of these facilities. We've also significantly expanded our ability to rapid test at each of these facilities. One of the most important things we can do is test this population quickly to identify positive cases and take appropriate action, such as isolation or treatment. Over the past several days, Massachusetts has launched a robust testing program for our seniors to do on-site tests at our nursing homes. It's not only a faster way to test, but it also prevents seniors who may be fragile or ill for other reasons from being disrupted or having to be brought to a hospital or an outside healthcare facility. The testing is being conducted by trained personnel from the Mass National Guard in partnership with DPH and the Broad Institute. These samples are then prioritized for processing. So far, the National Guard has been deployed to 80 facilities across the state and has completed more than 1,350 tests since this program started 7 days ago. Today, they will visit an additional 20 facilities. And we'll continue to build testing capacity in the coming weeks to serve a greater population and support many of our most vulnerable residents. Secretary Sutter will have more to say about this in a second. I want to remind people today, tomorrow, the day after, to stay home and to continue to take the necessary precautions associated with social distancing and following the guidelines that have been issued to keep each other, and especially our most vulnerable members of our community, safe and healthy at this time. We're extremely grateful for everything everyone has done to help us mitigate the spread of this virus in what has been, we would all agree, an incredibly difficult and trying time. The coming weeks will be crucial in fighting this disease and especially dealing with the surge, and we want to thank you for all you're doing to help us and to help your friends and your neighbors and your families. Residents can continue to stay informed by visiting mass.gov/COVID-19, which has been newly redesigned based on feedback from the public to help users find more quickly the information that they're looking for and that they need. And I do want to say thanks to the folks at the Executive Office of Technology and Security Services for their work with the Department of Public Health and our office to launch this redesigned site. It's part of our commitment to making sure that we get important information to the public in real time. And of course, you can always call 211 with questions or text COVIDMA to 888-777 to subscribe to text alert updates, which are now serving hundreds of thousands of people here in the Commonwealth. And with that, I will turn it over to Secretary Sutters.
Thank you, Governor, Lieutenant Governor. Good afternoon. As the Governor noted, we're infusing $800 million in critical stabilization funding to support our health care providers, particularly ones who are impacted by and responding to the COVID-19 public health emergency. As the Governor noted, and as we would all know, health care providers who have stepped up in unprecedented ways the past few weeks while experiencing significant impact on their revenue and operations. Funding will support hospitals, nursing facilities, primary care providers, behavioral health providers, and certain long-term services and support providers. And the funding will be distributed starting this month through July. The majority of funding, $400 million, supports 28 safety net and high Medicaid hospitals to address lost revenue, to stabilize them, and increase costs for hospitals at the front lines of treating patients with COVID-19. Included is a 20% rate increase for COVID-19 care, as well as a 7.5% increase across the board increase for all other hospital treatment. More than $80 million for nursing facilities, $50 million is dedicated funding for all nursing facilities across the state, essentially a rate increase. And facilities and units within nursing facilities that become designated COVID-19 sites of care receive approximately $30 million in additional funding to support their ability to care for COVID-19 patients. $30 million is for other healthcare providers delivering medical care for COVID-19 or providing services that keep residents safe in their homes and out of hospital, including $50 million for community health centers, $30 million for personal care attendants, funding for ambulance providers, community behavioral health providers, and home health agencies, and then funding for certain long-term care services and support day programs, such as adult day health and dayhab programs that have essentially converted from group programs to actively serving members via alternative means. And we've asked the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, sort of funny to describe myself in the third person, to continue to evaluate the situation and report back to us in June. As the governor said, we have put out additional guidance for nursing homes. Yesterday, we launched a nursing home family resource line, a dedicated telephone line that will connect family members of nursing home and rest home residents with information and resources that they need. The resource was created so family and community members have one central contact that they can reach out to if they have questions or concerns about the care their loved one is receiving during this COVID-19 pandemic. It is staffed 7 days a week. Staff coordinate across all state agencies to help callers find answers to their questions. That number is highly publicized, but for today, let me just give it to you. It's 617-660-5399. PPP update. Finally, as we work to ensure all our healthcare workers on the front lines are protected and safe, we continue to chase more PPE to get out to healthcare facilities, cities, towns, and our first responders across Massachusetts. Since the outbreak started, we've been able to get over 1,000 deliveries out. Over the weekend, we made around 350 deliveries, including 340,000 aircraft, as we refer to them, N95 masks. And to date, almost 475,000 masks so far have been delivered. We also delivered 95 of the 100 ventilators that we received from the federal stockpile. The PPE has gone to nursing homes, senior living facilities, hospitals, community health centers, local public safety, boards of health, and other healthcare facilities in the Commonwealth. We'll keep working to ensure we're bringing every resource we have to bear in the fight against COVID-19. Governor?
Questions?
Say again.
Were you on the call with Vice President Pence and Pena yesterday?
Yes.
Did you learn anything more about the distribution network for COVID-19 personal protective equipment?
Anything more than I already knew? No, I wouldn't say that I did, but they've been pretty good about communicating with states between those calls. Most of the communication typically takes place between FEMA and DC, FEMA at the regional level, and then the MEMA folks in the command center here. But there's a lot of traffic back and forth between the federal government and state governments on almost all the issues associated with PPE. Yeah.
Any more ventilators coming?
At this point in time, they and we are spending a lot of time tracking ICU bed use and ventilator use and access to ventilators, not just here in Massachusetts, but all over the country. It's one of the things that there's literally daily traffic back and forth between states and the feds. We fully expect that they will be amenable to providing us with additional units, particularly as we get closer to the surge.
This is WBUR, and you're listening to live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing.
Well, we asked for somewhere between 1,000 and 1,700, depending upon how you do the math and how you think about it in terms of what our anticipated and projected use would be. But as I've said many times over the course of the past 2 weeks, because this is an unprecedented circumstance, people are trying to learn from their own experience and from the experience of others as they go, because no one knows exactly how this is going to play out state to state. And if you pay attention to a lot of the models that are out there, they're constantly being revised by real data as the date that you expected something to happen arrives and something different is actually going on at that moment. And that's not just true here, that's true across a lot of the states. We're going to continue to advocate for additional ventilators because we believe we need them. And that's a big part of what the back and forth between the state and the federal government has been about for the past few days. But I'll give you two examples of what I mean by this. State of Washington sent 400 ventilators to New York. The reason they sent 400 ventilators to New York was because they had 400 ventilators it turned out that they didn't need. Oregon sent 140 back to the stockpile. I think over the course of time, what you're going to see is a fair amount of back and forth between states and the federal government, and just between states themselves with respect to access to those products as people need them to deal with the surge, because the surge is not going to happen at the same time in all 50 states. Quite the opposite. It's probably going to happen in clumps depending upon where particular outbreaks are occurring and where particular hotspots are. Most of the manufacturers of ventilators have presence in the U.S., although some of them do a fair amount of their manufacturing work in other countries. We're currently chasing a variety of supply chain channels that way as well.
Governor, could I ask you about unemployment benefits? You had mentioned last week that independent contractors, gig workers, part-time employees shouldn't file yet because you're waiting for the go-ahead from the Fed. Are we any closer to that?
The answer to that is yes. We've gotten there are three things that have happened on this. The first is we have talked to many of the financial custodians that we deal with on the traditional program and believe we have a workable plan in place to send unemployment benefits to about 240,000 people who've applied under the traditional program with the $600 additional payment, and those payments are going to go out over the course of the next week or so. In addition to that, we've gotten some guidance from the feds about how they're thinking about the gig workers, the folks who aren't currently in the UI system, who don't have a W-2, basically have 1099s, and that has made it easier for us to start thinking about how we would stand that up, but there's additional guidance we're waiting for and that we need to actually be able to implement the program.
Are you hopeful this week?
Oh, yeah, I'm really, yes. I would like to have it this week. We would like to get enough. Look, we spent a bunch of time trying to figure out how we would actually get money out the door, given the difficulty associated with a population that we've talked about here doesn't actually have a footprint within the existing UI system. And I think we've come up with some ways that we can do that. But they need to be done in conjunction with and in compliance with whatever we get from the feds.
Can you break down where the $800 million is coming from? You said from the federal?
It's a combination of things. First of all, you all may recall that we basically told the healthcare community that does elective surgeries to stop because we wanted them to build out capacity for COVID-19, and that is exactly what they've been doing. And as a result, there's been a pretty significant drop in payments made for those kinds of activities. In addition to that, we have a slightly higher reimbursement rate coming from the federal government under the second stimulus program, which added a 6.25% additional reimbursement rate at the federal level. You put those two things together plus a couple of other things, and that makes up a big piece of how the math works. And I would just say two things on this. You know, for those of you who remember the Democratic National Convention that took place here, I'm going to say 10 years, 15 years ago now?
04, right?
Was it 04? Okay, 15 years ago. Almost no health care got delivered in Boston during that period. And the reason I know that is because I was at Harvard Pilgrim at the time, and Harvard Pilgrim, Blue Cross, Tufts, and the provider community all noticed that literally everything went away during that week. And some of it came back and a bunch of it didn't. The second thing I would point to that we had similar circumstances with was a weather-related event, which was the winter of 2015. I mean, basically, nobody went to the hospital for a month in February during that period. And if that lasts for, you know, a certain period of time and then you expect things to start again, then the provider community can basically manage its way through that. But when you have a situation like this one, where we ordered them to stop doing elective surgeries, and where people stopped going in many cases unless they needed to go pretty much anywhere because we've got orders in place and essential workforce requirements and all the rest, that dramatically reduced our spending and their revenue. And at the same time, we were saying to them, we need you to build out capacity to meet the demands associated with COVID-19, which they're doing. We're basically almost going to double our ICU capacity as a result of that activity. But there's no money coming in the door for that. And we want to make sure these people and their workforces are properly prepared clinically, but we also want them to be in decent shape financially. And the secretary worked with other folks on the team in our administration. We then spent some time with the legislature, see if they'd be okay with what we were proposing to do here. And as a result, it's basically a big investment in our healthcare system based on some of the savings that came about as a result of decisions we made, the increase in the federal match money. But it's designed to make sure that these folks are financially able to stand up all the stuff we need them to stand up as part of the surge.
Is it a supplemental budget?
This is Radio Boston. We're bringing you live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily coronavirus briefing from the State House.
Part of the appropriations we're working with.
Any update on
Governor, I'm
the testing?
Looking at some guidance that was sent to employees at the Holdup Soldiers Hall about when they get their test results. And it says if you have a positive test but it's showing no symptoms, you should report to work. Is that how you
speak to this?
COVID test results action chart.
Can't say I've seen that chart. So let me give you some updates. I need my glasses. Let me give you some updates on Chelsea and Holyoke. So the total numbers at Chelsea Soldiers Home in terms of deaths hasn't changed. So we have 5 veteran resident deaths. And at Holyoke Soldiers Home, the total number at the Holyoke Soldiers Home in terms of deaths also has not changed. It remains at 25 veteran residents. We've increased the number of clinical staff, in particular social work and nursing staff, in order to have more contact with families, in order to ensure the families get the information that they need. We have been testing all of the staff, and I actually can't comment on what you're asking me because I have not seen that document, but I'm happy to sort of take a look and get back to you.
Should anybody who tests positive, should they report to work if they are showing those symptoms?
So the guidance generally is if you test positive, that you should stay out of work for a period of time, and then if you're asymptomatic, you can come back to work with protective gear and masks and the like. So I would need to see that document.
Secretary, could I ask you a question to follow up
sure.
on that? You've run some statistics about nursing homes. And I've been looking at parts of the state where deaths have gone up, and it looks like nursing homes are where there's clusters of deaths, and that distorts the numbers a bit. Do you have numbers on how many deaths are at nursing homes in these older facilities?
So that's a great question. So one of the things we are doing a deeper dive on is sort of the regional percentages of death per capita and looking at sort of where nursing homes are and other clusters, Bruce, because actually if you look in the Berkshires, of course, is where we had the first community spread, which was in Berkshire County up by in Pittsfield, and so that also sort of contributes to that. So while I can't answer your question specifically today, we're actually sort of doing a deep dive looking at where nursing homes are, where deaths have occurred by counties and the like, so that we can actually sort of pinpoint what is it in that region That contributes to sort of a higher per capita death because it's right now it's Essex County, Berkshire's in particular, have higher percentages of death rates.
Any updates on the testing sites that were talked about yesterday, particularly the Big E?
So I wasn't here yesterday for the press avail, but the Big E, so today, as you know, the Lowell site opened, and I just want to, if I can, just expand a little bit on what the governor said about the Lowell site. There's two things that make the Lowell site different. One is that it's rapid testing. So when you go and get tested, you will be asked to sort of step aside, and about 15 minutes later, you will get your test result. We also have the Partners in Health tracers at Lowell, and so if you were then positive, a Partners in Health contact tracer will approach you and talk to you about what you need to do to self-isolate. So it's like we're trying to bring together testing, like rapid testing, and then if you test positive with one of the Partners in Health contact tracers, giving you information, and it's in the five primary languages that serve the Lowell community. The other thing is, and maybe it's just we're all into data these days, so one of the questions someone asked when we rolled out the Partners in Health contact tracing program, someone asked, you know, is anybody going to apply for it? Over the weekend, there were more than 5,000 applications for the contact tracing program. 2,500 of them have been screened in for interviews and the like. So I'm not worried about having enough contact tracers in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Governor, I know yesterday...
I'm sorry? So we tried to when testing sites that we're involved in, we try to put that information out as much as possible. And let me just, so going back to the Big E, so the Big E should open up by the end of the week. Sorry about that, didn't finish that question. So obviously people can open testing sites that we don't know about, right, in the physician's office and the like. What we're trying to do is ensure that we have spread across the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We're trying to reopen another site in Shrewsbury that closed, which was the CVS site with FEMA. Lowell just opened, so the Northeast has not had a lot of trace, and we actually have a map that can show where we have testing sites. I mean, obviously, our goal is to have as accessible testing as available for people in the Commonwealth, and we will be expanding mobile testing, particularly for people, as the governor said, who are, for whatever reasons, right, mobility is an issue, and having mobile testing is very important to augment sort of on-site testing capacity in our state.
Do you anticipate releasing demographic information about all these cases that come in, and are you expecting a disproportionate impact on communities like Chelsea, Revere, and Ogden?
So, you know, I won't speculate, but yes, we are trying to take as much data as we have available to put it out. One of the challenges with testing data is when it comes into the lab, a lot of the detail that we would want, such as ethnicity, race, is often left blank, and all you get is the person's name and date of birth. So we're trying very hard to like get all of those fields filled out so that we have robust data available to report to the Commonwealth. But we are going to start putting out data, even though it will be incomplete, so that we can just get the data out, and with all the caveats that it's incomplete and the like, so that we have a better sense in Massachusetts.
Governor, could I ask you about the flattening of the curve? Yesterday at Eastern Bank, you warned against looking at just a couple of days and taking too much stock in it. And yet, although we haven't seen the stats from today yet, is there a concern that with the weather getting nicer and people thinking that things are getting better, that we may give up on social distancing and things could go south quickly?
Certainly one of the reasons we made the decision we made to ban parking at state-operated beaches was because we didn't like what we saw going on there with respect to distancing and gathering generally. I know that's one of the reasons why the mayor made several of the decisions he made with respect to parks in Boston. And many of the other local officials that we've talked to have pursued a variety of initiatives in their communities based on that as well. Look, I absolutely believe that that as the weather gets nicer, we're going to have to continue to be pretty aggressive about our messaging on this stuff, because nicer weather will encourage people to go outside. And as we've said before, if somebody wants to go for a walk, no one has a problem with that. It's when it gets way beyond that, outdoor recreational gaming of one type or another, big groups converging on each other, road races. We can't have that stuff. We just can't, because it completely defeats the whole point of what we're trying to achieve here, which is to limit the virus's ability to jump from infected people to uninfected people. And I've talked before about the fact that we all have, about the fact that there is a significant number of people who are going to be, in fact, COVID positive, who are never going to show signs. And therefore, they are perfectly able to infect other people without ever believing or understanding or knowing that they have COVID-19 themselves. And that's one of the reasons why the CDC issued the order that it, or the guidance that they issued with respect to wearing a mask when you're outside if you don't think you can live up to the guidelines associated with social distancing, partly to protect you from others, but just as much to protect others from you. So I think the arrival of nicer weather is absolutely going to be an issue. But, you know, frankly, if we're going to be successful in dealing with this issue over time, and especially dealing with this issue as we head into the surge, people have got to understand that we need to stop the spread. It's like goal number one, job number one, and it has a lot to do with virtually all of the decisions we've made and the vast majority of the decisions that other states and municipalities and the feds have made.
Have you seen the numbers from today yet? And it, is there, in fact, a reduction in the increase?
I don't think they come out for another 50 minutes, right? We don't see them until...
I just thought you'd have an inside scoop, Governor.
Can I say one thing about the distribution of testing? The thing to remember here is every testing site is not necessarily ours. And in fact, there are many people who test in provider organizations all over the Commonwealth who rely on other labs to process their tests. Quest probably processes tests for dozens and dozens and dozens of providers that operate all over Massachusetts. We certainly believe that for our stuff, where we have the opportunity to put testing in places where, based on our conversations with folks in the healthcare community and our conversations with folks in the municipal community, people say we think we need additional test capacity. But remember here, there are a ton of providers out there who do not actually do tests on site, process tests on site, but who are actually doing tests on site all over Massachusetts. We certainly believe that in all of those programs, we're going to see increased demand, and expect and anticipate that that's something we'll have to work through our colleagues with the legislature with toward the end of the year. It's also part of where I think some of the resources that the federal government's made available to states will ultimately get applied. In the third stimulus bill, there are three big pieces to that one. One was the business relief, the second was the unemployment piece, and one of the other sort of major elements of that was support for state and local governments. And I fully expect that some of that is going to end up being used to support the increases in a number of those programs as well.
Governor, what is Dr. Burrell doing, and also Secretary Turco?
So Secretary Turco is, I'd say they're both doing fine. I mean, obviously there are different points in different places with respect to the virus, but they are both reachable by phone, and Dr. Burrell, I would say, is more reachable at this point than Secretary Turco. We've both told Secretary Turco to look after himself for a few days here.
Governor, on the news that a market basket worker died this morning, what is the spread looking like among frontline workers at pharmacies and supermarkets like that? And do they need more protective gear, or is
Well, we put out some additional guidelines for grocery stores today, which I don't know all of it, so I'm going to ask someone who does to speak to that.
We will be issuing later today the guidance, further guidance relative to grocery stores, so there's more of a uniform distribution across our communities about how to provide a safe environment for customers as well as the workforce at our groceries. We are issuing guidance that will say 40% of the occupancy, and that occupancy will include both employees and customers as the number to be enforced by local boards of health relative to the number of people in store to be able to access the goods and the necessities they need for their trip to the groceries and then to return home.
And are you all tracking how fast the spread is among those types of frontline workers?
I don't think we have a specific. We have our tracking numbers that you see as well as we do to examine, but to identify a particular working class of person or job, no, we don't have specific numbers there.
Thanks, everybody.
I certainly think that this should help stabilize healthcare organizations generally, and that was a big part of the reason why we did it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we've been bringing you live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's daily briefing on the coronavirus. A number of headlines today, mostly focused on $800 million in new funding for healthcare and healthcare providers in the Commonwealth. WBUR's senior political reporter Anthony Brooks was also following the press conference, joins us now. Hey there, Anthony.
Hi, Tiziana.
Let me just check in. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. How about you?
I am well, thanks. So let's just start with what stood out to you from the briefing today, Anthony.
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, I think you put your finger there on the headline, $800 million to sort of stabilize healthcare providers. And the reason that this is needed, as the governor explained, is because these institutions have been asked to do a lot to prepare for this surge, including giving up revenue service sources like non-essential surgeries. So the state's going to be providing $800 million, $400 million to hospitals, which support safety net hospitals on the front line, more than $80 million to nursing facilities, $300 million to other healthcare providers, including ambulance providers, home health agencies, long-term care programs, and the like. So a big source of cash infusion to basically keep the medical system solvent and able to go forward and do what needs to be done during this crisis.
So state tax collection, Anthony, has been delayed till the middle of July, so revenues aren't coming in. Where is this $800 million coming from? Did the governor talk about that at all?
Yeah, he talked about it a little bit. And I have to say that sometimes when I'm listening to this stuff, I kind of lose the thread because state finances tend to be incredibly
I shouldn't laugh, but I'm just that's sympathy coming from me there.
No, I took your laughter only as a positive, sympathetic
yes.
response. But basically, it has to do with a couple of things. One of the things is the state is spending less because these hospitals are doing less of these elective surgeries. So that's my understanding. That's one source of the money. There was another one that the governor explained, but I'm sifting through my notes here and I'm not coming up with it right at the moment.
Yeah, actually, I will admit the part that I understood was essentially the Commonwealth wasn't paying for other kinds of medical services. And that's where this money was coming from.
Oh, there was also a chunk of it coming from the second stimulus package, which essentially a federal stimulus package, which essentially delivers more money to the state and allows them to dip into that pot. So that's a part of it. But the governor also talked about, you know, conversations with members of the legislature. So I'm sure it's a lot more complicated than that.
Let's stay on the stimulus package thing, because he also talked a little bit about unemployment. And you might recall that in a briefing within the last 7 to 10 days, he was very clear that the Commonwealth had not received guidance from the federal government yet about how to distribute unemployment money that was coming down through the CARES Act. Sounds like we're in a little bit different place today. What did you hear on that note?
Yeah, so what I heard, there was a question about unemployment benefits, essentially waiting for those federal guidelines for independent contractors and gig workers who don't end up in the usual sort of unemployment insurance system, as it were. So there's new federal money that states are going to be able to get to pay these contract workers' unemployment benefits, but the state has been waiting for federal guidelines. And you're right, the governor suggested we are in a different place. He's still hopeful that the guidance is coming. He was asked if it would be coming as soon as this week. He said it would. And so that would allow the state to get these checks out to these folks who obviously need the money, having been laid off.
Anthony, there are a number of other really important recurring themes that come up in these daily briefings. One of them is personal protective equipment, and HHS Secretary Mary Lou Sutter's talked some about that today. Governor Baker did too, especially the ventilators, after we got news earlier this week that the Commonwealth thought they were expecting 1,000 ventilators from the federal government and then found out we were going to only get 100. So what's the latest?
Yeah, so the latest is that so it's sort of more of the same, that the state, the Commonwealth continues to have these talks with the federal government every day. Charlie Baker, Governor Baker, said that he believes that the federal government will be amenable to providing more ventilators. He asked for as many as 1,700. And he said, we're going to continue to advocate for more because we think we need them. But he also made the point that one of the ways these ventilators are going to become available are between the states. He talked about the state of Washington sending 400 ventilators to New York City because Washington didn't need them anymore. New York City did. So he expects a fair amount of back and forth as states or sort of regions surge. The surge is going to hit different states, different parts of the country at different times. So that's one of the ways that these ventilators will be freed up. But the bottom line is these conversations with the feds over ventilators coming from the national stockpile are ongoing, and he hopes they bear fruit.
You know, the governor did and does talk a lot about federal cooperation, conversations between states, et cetera. Do you get a sense from him over these last couple of days that the collaboration, clearly with what you just said, there's some good cooperation happening across states. Are we getting a sense of a change in the relationship between the Commonwealth and the federal government in terms of communication and cooperation?
You know, that remains to be seen. It's a great question because, of course, it's a big theme for a lot of governors. And depending on which governor you are, how hard your state is hit, and sort of your disposition toward the Trump administration, I think, determines that. We've heard Charlie Baker express some frustration with working with this federal government, but he's careful about how he expresses that. You know, I'm thinking back to when he was talking frequently about being outbid by the federal government and talking about difficult conversations with the federal government. So I'd be surprised if you got Baker in a private room and said, is everything dandy? You know, is everything sort of, all where it needs to be in terms of the state working out what it needs to work out with the federal government? But Baker's been fairly careful about, you know, how he expresses those concerns. I think, you know, his view from the start of the Trump administration, frankly, is one, you know, for better or for worse, we have to work with the Trump administration. And he's not the kind of guy to get really vocal about these kinds of frustrations. So that's just part of who Charlie Baker is, right? He's kind of steady Eddie. He's unemotive and, you know, just wants to focus on the business and get it done. But, you know, there's no question that there have been some frustrations. And that's what led to this whole, you know, looking for a way to get those 1 million masks from China and going directly to the Chinese government and getting the Kraft family involved in their private jet and so on and so forth, because he wasn't getting what he needed from the federal government.
So there are two other subjects I just want to touch on while we've still got you, Anthony. One, he did give a little bit of an update on testing today. What are the headlines on testing?
Testing, the idea is that testing continues, and they're working aggressively to expand capacity. Massachusetts is now one of the largest testers in the country. There are 25 public and private labs in addition to the state labs. He talked about a new testing site in Lowell coming online that's going to be able to test 1,000 people a day, results almost immediately. And this would be in partnership with the Partners in Health contact tracing group. So some people would get tested, and then they would try to bring those people together with this this rapid testing with the information about how to self-isolate and so on and so forth. He also talked about a drive-through testing site that he had visited in Foxborough that's been up and running for a few days.
So he was also asked about whether he had concerns that this warm weather was going to change behavior in a way that would be detrimental to flattening the curve, Anthony.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because with the warmer weather, you know, people want to get out, and he's absolutely encouraging people to go for a walk if that's what they want to do. But he's trying to make it clear that playing games outdoors, congregating, road races, that kind of stuff just can't happen. And it has to be said that there are some folks in Massachusetts, some elected officials, who continue to be alarmed by this and want Baker to be more forceful in sending out the message that people can't. I mean, you heard him saying that they shouldn't do that, that people shouldn't congregate. There are some elected officials that want the Baker to assert more of his authority to ensure that people don't. But at the moment, you know, he has this stay-at-home advisory, this advisory not to congregate. But, you know, there's the state banning parking at state beaches because they don't like what is happening out at state beaches as the weather gets warmer. So it'll be interesting to see if this sort of soft approach that the governor is using is going to have to change as the warmer weather comes and more people are going to be tempted to go out and, you know, get together on the beaches and so forth.
And Anthony, lastly, before we let you go, we got a sneak preview of some guidelines that the Commonwealth is planning to put out to make grocery store sort of behavior and practices more consistent. It was pretty interesting, the sneak preview that we got.
Yeah, I mean, this is interesting, too, because when you think about these folks who work in the grocery stores, I mean, they're really part of this group of frontline folks who are putting themselves at risk every day to.
We just heard about a Market Basket employee who has passed.
Absolutely.
Away.
So this is an essential part of keeping people safe, not only the people who go into grocery stores, but the people who are working there every single day.
Well, Anthony Brooks, I appreciate you joining us today and on the other days that you've helped us cover the governor's press briefings. I imagine we will do it again. And in the meantime, I appreciate it and stay safe.
You too, Tisiana. It's always my pleasure.